People of the world, it's The Brothers Talk with your hosts Rod, Scott, and Norm, and we're glad you join us each Friday wherever you listen to your favorite podcast to hear our take as three Black, unfiltered African-American men with no strings attached, giving voice to the most feared, most misunderstood, and most rarely heard from segment of the population on topics of interest to us for education, enlightenment, and entertainment. We're excited to continue spreading the message that promotes critical thinking and thoughtful conversations, advocating for social activism, and uplifting people everywhere. We're also inviting you to join us as we continue the work of encouraging and educating everyone with the edifying task of identifying, endorsing, and inspiring new and existing Black businesses and individuals for the empowerment and prosperity of our community. Send your comments, questions, and suggestions, and follow us on Facebook, on X, formerly known as Twitter, at The Brothers Talk, The Brothers Talk on Instagram, and you can email us, thebrotherstalk@gmail.com. And stay tuned for details about our YouTube channel, our upcoming book, and tour dates. And now on with this week's program. And welcome in once again to all members of the Brothers Talk family around the world, wherever you're listening in, and to all of our first-time listeners, as you join our worldwide household on a very special edition of the podcast. We extend you a cordial invitation to join us in the ongoing battle to promote critical thinking and social justice activism. And don't forget to spread the word about the podcast and join us in the fight against those whose ongoing efforts are focused on keeping the masses dumbed down and indifferent to thinking for themselves. Before we get to our very special topic, here's your weekly coronavirus awareness alert, because we care. We'll be quick about the disease this week because there's a great article about the problems that are still rampant with the ignorance around COVID-19 in the USA Today that we encourage you to read and share. In short, it says hundreds of thousands who, for reasons often rooted in misinformation, chose not to get vaccinated. About 30% of the population hasn't received the initial series of vaccines, and the spread of COVID-19 misinformation on social media has been a concern for public health experts since the start of the pandemic. Nearly 25% of all claims have been debunked by the USA Today's fact-checking team from March 2020 to December 2021 that were related to COVID-19. That fell to 10% from January 2022 to December 2023. Which is still too high as the specific claims varied, but common themes included the existence and origin of the disease, purported alternative treatments, and all manner of claims about the vaccine. So again, we say, let's be smart and do what we can to keep from getting sick by sticking to what we know works. Get vaccinated, get those boosters, wear masks in crowded situations, wash your hands regularly, use plenty of disinfectants, and if you or you have children and you do get sick, stay home until the contagious period passes. 5 days for COVID, 4 days for the flu, 8 days for RSV from when you notice you first have symptoms. Again, no one should end up unnecessarily in the hospital or worse from these preventable diseases. We can and we must do better. And now to my brothers in the struggle for critical thinking, Scott and Norm.
Thanks, Rod. As usual, Rod pretty much said it all about COVID itself. I read this article yesterday, and the title of the article was, "The Coronavirus is Not Done With Us Yet." So as much as we want to think that in our behaviors, we're acting that way, I'm seeing less and less and less masks being worn every place I go. You got to still be vigilant to take care of yourself, your family, and your loved ones. One thing I do want to say is this whole business about democracy is on the brink in this country is true, is not false. Quit listening to that nonsense you're hearing on Fox and other right-wing TV and radio stations talking about how Black people are supporting 45. You got these dishonest Black Republicans out there saying that the reason that Blacks are supporting 45 is because of the fact that we've experienced the same things that he's experienced in the justice system, which is totally false. Norm?
Thanks, Scott. I just want to remind everyone that Easter, the holidays are coming up, and it's another opportunity to support Black businesses in our community. And as Rod and Scott have mentioned, you know, it's also important to remember that the health of our community is important. Mm-hmm. So please wear your masks, make sure you have your vaccines up to date, and take care of your families. Rod?
Brothers, we're going to take another turn in our quest to keep our format interesting and relevant, so I'm going to take the opportunity here to tee up this week's topic and get your in-the-moment reaction and feedback. It was initially inspired by a comment that Scott made about Black Americans' propensity and ability to excel in this country, and it's been further affirmed for me as I read Michael Harriet's seminal book, Black AF History. You see, I'm currently working on my own book about the inherent evil of whiteness, which in short emphasizes the false socioeconomic construct of a white race has not only been despicable from its conception and more malevolent in its application than any other precept in world history as a tool of the ultimate evil, but that no self-respecting person should ever want to claim it as an identifier. So, Scott, your observation spurred a related thought in me regarding why this insidious effort to preserve and expand a white supremacist world brew has been gathering such steam recently. And here's what I came up with. It's that 13% thing. Yes, first, I thought it had to do more with the shrinking number of European descendants in this nation and worldwide, and the fact that particularly here in the United States, that they're rapidly on their way to becoming minority. But that really doesn't explain why they've been so hell-bent on finding ways to oppress and suppress us, even as they held the clearly dominant majority. These efforts are certainly ramping up as they don't have a workable solution to reverse their population downturn, even as they continue to insist that the census has mysteriously kept us as no more than 13 to 14% of the population, while acknowledging that all other minority groups continue to increase. Now, our eyes tell us that we actually may be as high as percentages in the low 20s, but it's really the 13% that has white privileged supremacist America spooked. And here's why. The entire history of this country has been outlined and punctuated with the superlative accomplishments of members of we the 13%, whether in business, in sports, in politics, in entertainment, in inventions, in science, in education, in healthcare, in finance, in construction, in agriculture, in life. I'm sure you get the picture that it has to be so maddeningly frustrating to them that despite all of their efforts to control us, to hold us down, to break us, and to potentially get rid of us, even if that means destroying us, they simply cannot understand why none of it works long term. Just think about this. The European codification of many different ethnic groups formed to demonize and dehumanize African descendants has been by various means both legalized into the laws of the land that actively discriminated against us and illegalized by everything from mob violence and underhanded unethical dealing to outright ignorance and perversion of the laws that are supposed to apply equally to us as native-born citizens. That not only do we bounce back, but we actually get stronger from enduring and experiencing the adversity. It's an amazing thing, this revelation of the impact that 13% has on the evil mindset of whiteness, but it explains a lot. Your thoughts, brothers?
You know, Rod, that whole concept, the way that Black people at every turn, well, first, I'm going to give a little scenario. I was working for the Center of Disease Control, and there was an Asian woman sitting on one side of me, and there was a Cuban woman who considered herself white, who said she was white. That's what she told me. I'm like, well, anyway, she sat across from me. And one day they came into my office and they said to me, you know, there's something we want to ask you. We don't want to hurt your feelings. And I was like, there's nothing you can possibly say to me that's going to hurt my feeling, because you're not paying, unless you're not, my rent's not going to be paid and my mortgage or whatever, and my check not going to be in it. Anyway, they were like, why is it that there aren't that many PhDs working here, Black PhDs? And I said, well, you don't need a PhD here to work here. I don't have a PhD and I make more money than both of y'all. They both were PhDs. And I said, I gave them the scenario. I said, most Black people think the way that I think. We feel that, you know, everybody else had a 400-year head start on us. You know, we were put in this hole, this pit, whatever you want to call it. For 400 years, we were in there and we clawed our way out. And when once we got out, it was like, okay, you're on your own. And today, if you take a look at all the things that Rod said, when you talk about medicine, when you talk about sports, and I was naming specific, I was like, you know, we tried to keep us out of golf because of, and that's when Tiger Woods was really hot, because of the cost. But look, you let one guy in there, Tiger Woods, and he's dominating. We're dominating all of the sports. We've been the first, when you start talking about science, open heart surgery, brain surgery, all of these firsts, all of these inventions. And I was like, why wouldn't we think that I said, if there wasn't any roadblocks that's been thrown in front of us, we would win 100 out of 100 times. Why wouldn't we think that, considering all of the roadblocks, all of the laws, all of the things that we got to navigate, that we have to go through to compete? And even when we're competing, in spite of all this stuff that we're dragging, we got to go around, got to go over, we're either coming in first or we're coming in second. They're not concerned about the Asians. They're not concerned about the Indians. They're not concerned about any other minority group but Blacks. Why? Because we're so resilient. They've tried to extinguish us, and we're still here. We're still competing, and we're competing at a high level, even though you put all of these obstacles in our way.
And I believe Public Enemy said it best with their album, Fear of a Black Planet. They realized that if they ever create a equal or level playing field, that they would really, really be unable to compete. They see that. And especially in regards to what's happening politically in this country, as we talk about often here, that they have to basically say that the election is stolen, this and that, because they realize the minority population in this country is growing and their population is really shrinking. And eventually this will be a colored country, or should I say a minority populated, dominating country, and their forefathers never saw that coming.
And so you see how it lines up, though, that they don't really put any obstacles in the way of any other ethnic group. And how do they keep coming up with the idea that, as we know, we look around us and we see our young girls having babies just like a lot of these other ethnic groups. So how is it that they continue to tell us that no matter what happens in us, we don't get any less? We stay right at that 13%. And as you and I have talked about, Scott, like I said, you know, you can't go hardly anywhere in this country where you don't find Black people. And somehow we are always back at that 13%, which I think is their way of trying to keep us from realizing that we're growing. But the other part of it is just what you're saying, Norm, is that they look around and they realize that we're the group they've got to stop. They, whether it's trying to keep us from voting, they don't try to stop other groups from voting, whether it's trying to keep us out of certain industries and sports and so forth. They didn't have those issues with other ethnic groups, but it's something about us and that 13%. And I think the key is that when we get access, we excel and we basically dominate in a way that's what is at the root of their fear. That in no other group do they really see as being able to take over so completely because they can't compete. And they really ought to be ashamed of themselves. That's what my final takeaway is that their fear has them doing stuff that if they really thought they were truly superior, then why would they be so busy trying to put every obstacle, like you said, Scott, in our path?
You know, Rod, that whole 13% thing, you know, it goes from 13% to 13.6% and stuff like that. But I think that if the true number of Black people in this country, and that 13% normally is going to be somewhere between 36 million and 40 million. But it's more, in my opinion, going to be closer to 60 million to 80 million people. And they don't want Black people to know that, hey, you got these kind of numbers. Because of the way that they collect the census, the way that they do it, especially when they go into Black communities in the inner city, they're not counting everybody. They're grids that they use, and they got people that go in there and estimate. And so you got people that go in there who are not, they don't look like me and you. They go into the community and they say, and they observe. They move in the communities and they observe and they say, well, that's how they used to do it. I don't know if they still do it that way. You know, I think it's only one person or two people living in that house when actually it may be 10. So they're underestimating, they're undercounting so that the number can stay low, so that Black people can realize that, hey, there are a lot more of us in this country, and we got more political power than we realize. And so that has a lot to do with that whole census thing. And far as we talked about all of these obstacles, there are obstacles when you start talking about Jim Crow, what we had to go through with Jim Crow, and all of these political, the policies and the laws that they passed that hold us back to redlining and all those things. But one thing that did more damage to me and continued to do damage to the Black community is the media. The kind of negativity that the media over the course of my lifetime and probably forever, almost every story that you saw on the media was about Black people were negative. welfare queens. We're not the ones who are utilizing the social services the most because of the numbers. You know, they do it by percentages, but it's the number of people. So you start talking about welfare. They got welfare queens. We got all these different terms that they use, these dog whistles, these codes to disparage Black people when you got minorities from other groups of people coming over here, Indians, Asians. They're feeding from this cloth that they haven't paid anything into. They're allowed to, like, government contracts. You got a situation now where somebody sent me an article, and I saw it myself also, where this judge ruled that it was racist to have a minority business set aside. So now it's open up to everybody. Some white people filed a suit. And this judge, I don't know, I'm waiting to see what the Dems do. The judge ruled that it was, and this has been in place for like 50 years. And all of a sudden, some people, the little crumbs that we're getting, they want that too. So it's those kind of things. It's a combination of things that's been thrown at us. And we're continuing to navigate this minefield. And we're still competing. We're still competing at a high level. And we're still being successful.
God, I agree with you 100%. But there's one aspect of the media that I wanted to address. There's zero media out there, and especially regarding to journalism, that's trying to educate our voters and give us real news regarding our representatives. Literally everything, as you mentioned, is pretty much negative regarding our community, but nothing actually trying to educate and bring awareness to our community in regards to what we're voting for, who we're voting for, and the importance of our vote. And really, if we had a source like that to really educate our electorate, we would do much better in holding our elected officials accountable and choosing the right candidates to vote for and actually producing the right candidates from our community.
So there you have it. And it's pretty clear to us that that 13% thing is another way for them to try to find a way to constrict and hold us back. But just as with a lot of their other efforts, it won't work. So our new rallying cry is going to be the 13%. We are the 13%. Even though we know it's not right, we're going to take it and run with it because we know that it really scares the devil out of white privilege supremacist thinking. In our Black Business Spotlight, meet Marquita and Devin Carter, the African-American couple behind Blanket Pancakes and Syrup. Their pancake and syrup products, born from a quest for healthier breakfast options, which have landed on the shelves of major retailers like Costco and Walmart. Starting from humble beginnings, they are now hitting $1 million in sales in less than 5 years. The idea for Blanket sparked during Marquita's high-risk pregnancy when she sought natural ingredients for her favorite breakfast. They crafted homemade recipes free from artificial additives like high fructose corn syrup, which they initially shared with family and friends. The business name, Blanket, conveys warmth, coziness, and security, qualities they want customers to feel when enjoying their product. Learn more about the brand via its official website, blanketps.com. And be sure to follow them on Instagram at Blanket Pancakes. And remember, our ongoing Black Business Spotlight theme continues to be, let's relaunch Black Wall Street nationwide. And don't forget that Pearl Moore and Lynette Woodard are the real all-time women's college basketball scoring leaders. That's a wrap for this week's show. And remember to follow and share your thoughts with us by sending your comments as well as your questions and show ideas to at The Brothers Talk on X, formerly Twitter, and catch us on Facebook, Instagram, or email us, thebrotherstalk@gmail.com. As always, God willing, we'll continue to keep our focus on the issues that impact our community as we stay on the path to a better future. And until our next episode, know that we sincerely appreciate your time and your interest, and you can rest assured we'll never take it or you for granted. And finally, let's all do better today, because that's all we really have.